Would you buy this content site and pair it with your business? All right, John, I'm digging around, looking for things to talk about on this show, and I get an email in my inbox from Quiet Light. I do love their emails every day, and they say, we have a content site you need to look at, so let me pull it up for you. All right, so it says, RV enthusiast content site, 90% year over year page view growth, diversified revenue, affluent audience. They're asking $336,000. It's saying it did $118,000 in revenue last year, $112,000 in profit. That's a really good number, at a multiple of 3x. So 336 is what they're looking for here. And it just got me thinking, who should buy this business? And I started coming up with a bunch of ideas, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, yeah. And I got to say, I think those like emails like from Quiet Light, I get a bunch of these as well, like from Flipper and a few other ones. They are like my favorite emails. Like I would recommend if you're somebody who wants to do some fun business stuff, just go and sign up for a bunch of business broker emails, because why I like them, aside from finding cool businesses that are for sale, is just seeing all the businesses that are for sale. Like, and you literally see so many, and they're selling for, at least their valuation is good. What they actually sell for is another question, obviously, but like, and you're just like, man, there are just so many businesses out there, and some of them are just like wild, like crazy little businesses, and they're still selling for like multiple six figures or even seven figures, some of them, and you're like, what, really? Like, I could do that. I love those emails. Every day I get them. I always read them.
Something about this makes me want to do it too, right? I've literally sold a business with Quiet Light. I've sold one with Empire Flippers. I've sold one on Flippa. And I know Chuck from Quiet Light, him and I have talked about this before. I think there's another life where I could be doing this as the broker, because you're going to see all these cool businesses. You're rooting for entrepreneurs. You're rooting for someone to take it over and do well as well. It just seems like something that would be a whole lot of fun. Probably a big nightmare as well, the communication and the arguing back and forth and the lawyers and all that stuff. I'm sure that there's shitty parts to it, but it makes me want to do this. But you're right. When I see these in my inbox, I open every single one. Because it's always a very interesting business. I'm always curious to see multiples, and you're going to learn something either way. But this one caught my eye mostly because I know people who have sold either products into an RV, like I have, or products for an RV. Like we had a mutual friend who sold the covers for like tires and the covers for their RV. Plus there's, you know, people who rent these RVs out. You used to rent these RVs out. And so this one stood out to me of like, there's a lot of things you could do with this business, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the obvious one is like reading through this listing, that the income that you talked about at the start says a good chunk of revenue is from sponsorships that people have just reached out to this website owner and said, you've got an audience and we want to get in front of them. Can we pay you to feature, I guess, ads, or maybe they've got product links or whatever on the site? You know, he's got a little YouTube channel that's monetized. The obvious thing that jumps out to me straight away is obviously we're e-commerce guys. You can drop ship tons of products for these customers at the very least, or if not, have your own brand in the space as well. And tack that onto the content site and lead all of that traffic back to your e-commerce business. And, you know, why worry about necessarily building the whole system when you can kind of go and acquire it sometimes, you know what I mean? Or even add it to another website you're ranking as well and have this sitting alongside that. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty enticing opportunity for sure from that perspective. And I could see putting it alongside other business as well. Like you said, I used to have a RV rental business, and you know, while obviously this site's going to be getting a bit of traffic from a lot of different places, some of it's still going to fall within the realms of where you service. And so you can use a site like this for lead generation. You could generate leads of people who want to rent RVs in their local area and sell them to other people that have an RV business that you, if you can't service the leads. And so there's so many different ways you could take this, I think, in terms of how to tack it onto other businesses, like existing businesses, for sure.
There's two things that jump out to me here, and they make me, both of them make me drool. One of them is $118,484 in revenue and $112,787 in profit. We're e-commerce guys. You don't do that kind of profit in e-commerce, right? And, you know, we sell a course teaching people how to start their own e-commerce business, digital products even. We're not hitting those kind of profit margins. That's incredible, right? That means they're spending no money on ads. They have just a lot of traffic coming their way, which you'd have to figure out how to maintain. But those margins are, you know, drool-worthy, right? The other one that stands out to me is basically a 3x multiple. So you don't have to be a sophisticated investor to know that getting 33% on your money is hard to do, right? The market returns 8%. In reality, that's because we print 8% of dollars every year into existence. And the best hedge funds are doing 15%, 20%, right? And there's certainly bigger years and smaller years in the market. But this is essentially saying maintain this and you will return 33% on your money. After 3 years, you will have your money back and you will have this asset that is just producing for you. I think you and I could sit here and probably brainstorm a bunch of things that you could do to it to increase revenue. You already mentioned a bunch of those. And so likely you're going to, you know, return your capital a lot faster and you're going to have these juicy margins. So imagine you're pairing this with your e-commerce store, and your e-commerce store at the end of the day, you're spitting out 15% margins. Well, this just added 95% margins to your bottom line to add into your 15%. And so just buying this and pairing it with your business and not even trying to figure out how to utilize it, you're already bringing up the overall profitability of your entire business, thus immediately increasing your multiple. If you just said, I bought this and now I just want to go sell my business with this. But man, these margins are juicy. Anytime I see numbers like that, I get really excited because, you know, they're not spending a dime on anything yet. Imagine if they, you know, pulled all the levers they could pull and maybe even spend a dime here or there. I think you could increase these numbers.
Yeah. And it's not even like you would need to disrupt that income. Like say you were going to pair this with an e-commerce business or a dropshipping business or whatever. You wouldn't even need to disrupt that income to do that because like it says here, income's coming from Mediavine ads, affiliate sales, sponsored posts, and social media monetization generate most of the revenue, right? You wouldn't need to get rid of any of those things. Maybe some affiliate links, maybe. You might replace those with links to your own products, but that's still going to result in sales. But all of the other stuff, like you wouldn't need to get rid of that. So it would kind of be like you would add this profit center to your business and then use it to generate even more sales for your e-commerce business while still doing things like the social media monetization, the sponsored posts, the Mediavine ads, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You'd still be doing all of that. And so I agree, like it's not, you could get this, tack it onto your business. Assuming it holds up, you're going to pay it off pretty quick or return your investment pretty quick. And then it's also going to, ideally, if you hook it up properly, generate more sales for your e-commerce business as well. So it's kind of like a double win from that perspective. So it's kind of a no-brainer. I'm kind of like, should we sit here for the next couple of hours and see if there's any in any of our niches available for sale?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing I thought of. I kind of wish, you know, I was in a company, we sold a lot to tiny homes, but a lot to RVs too. A lot of products that are in there. Composting toilets came to mind for me right away, right? Composting toilets are likely in both of these vehicles, sometimes not in RVs. But that was definitely an audience we were trying to reach. And we had a hard time reaching them, right? And we were looking for an influencer just like this to simply put an article on there. So there's an opportunity to buy this and simply put your own article on there of like, you know, best composting toilets for RVs. And magically you have the article there. I think back to, I believe it was Moise Ali with Native Deodorant. He turned me on to this idea way back when of like, you go buy an article on another website and then you run traffic to that, right? So it's just like, you know, best deodorant for sweaty ladies or whatever his article was. It had something to do with women. And then he put Native at the top, right? And put a discount. They were number one. Here's a discount if you shop Native. And then, you know, put his competitors 2, 3, 4, and 5. And then ran all of his traffic to that page. You could essentially do the same thing here, right? And just list your product as the option. Man, there's just so many options of what you could do here.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to look at some of the analytics behind the business. I mean, the only thing that stands out to me is like potentially an issue is like, and tell me what you think of this because this is more in your space than mine, but like it's clearly a content site and I'd love to see how much of it's organic search traffic because I kind of worry a little bit about just content sites and you know, Google and stuff. Obviously, a lot of them have taken a hit in recent times. Would you be concerned about that?
I would have to see the trajectory of the business, right? Did it take a hit when AI, you know, quote unquote, became a thing at some point? I guarantee it did. Everybody took a little bit.
Yeah.
Is it going down? I mean, that's what I would have to see. Is it trending downward? It sounds like this person puts in, it says the seller spends 10 to 15 hours per week creating, scheduling, and updating content, right? So are they still putting out content?
Yeah.
Are they charging people to come, you know, guest post on their site? Are they, you know, they says social media monetization as well. Is that where it's coming from mostly? If you're, you know, I do think, man, I did a presentation in 2023 at our Minneapolis event talking about how you're going to have to be a content creator in the future. It's not just going to be SEO anymore. This is going to change. That was pre-AI really becoming a thing. And so if this is more YouTube and shorts and content, then I think it has a long pathway ahead of it to continue to grow.
Yeah. I mean, there's clearly some extra, some bits there to grow. Like it does mention the YouTube angle and it's got just over 2,000 subscribers at this point, which is not a lot in YouTube standards, right? So there's obviously room that you could grow. You probably repurpose all the existing content on there and not even have to create like much from scratch. You probably got some growth there for sure. So, I mean, that's interesting to me.
The beauty of YouTube and every other channel nowadays is you don't need followers, right? So even with 2,000 followers, I mean, look at us. We have about 1,000 people. By the way, if you're watching this and you're not subscribed, go subscribe, please. We'd appreciate that. But we have about 1,000 subscribers at the time of recording this, and we get less views for sure, but we get more views on podcasts as well. And so it's an interest graph, right? It doesn't matter who you follow anymore. It doesn't matter whether you subscribe or not. If you're into something, magically the algorithms are incredible at saying, you know, even if you like hold, you know, you stop on a picture of a frog, pull your phone away, you take a big sneeze, and then your kid needs something, you help your kid, and you come back, and your phone's still sitting on that frog, you can't scroll the rest of the day without seeing 40,000 frogs, right? And like, it's gotten really good at this point. And so I think if you can just put out, it sounds like they have content, if you can put out repurposed content and hopefully even more RV-type content, you're going to get in front of RV people one way or another.
Yeah, for sure. No, I like it. You know, going back to the question that you asked at the start, I mean, oh, if I had an RV site selling RV stuff, I'd be like, how can I come up with that money? Or like, what deal can I do here to get this site? Like, it feels like a no-brainer, but like, obviously you do a bunch of due diligence here and look into the site and where's the traffic coming from and what's the trajectory and all that sort of stuff and look for some holes. But on the outside, like the strategy is a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, try to think through our own businesses, right? So if a skid steer content type site rolled up and looked, had similar numbers to this, would we seriously consider buying this? I would hope so. I would hope you and I are really thinking, how could we utilize this to blow up the business right away? The financing, I think maybe we should have somebody on here in the future to help us learn some of the creative financing ways you could finance this, right? Usually when it's on a brokerage, they're not going to do seller financing. They certainly would. By the way, this was posted a while ago and it's still up here. So who's the advisor here? Brad Whalen, if you're listening to this, buddy, and you want to tell them we have some ideas for them as a business and they want to keep it, you let them know. Otherwise, you know, if there's someone listening, John and I would happily tag along and help you grow this thing too, because I think this would be a perfect addition to a lot of our businesses if indeed we were still in the RV industry. It makes me want to go look for, you know, some of the industries that we're in. Is there content sites? And maybe it's not on a brokerage. Maybe it's just go find them and then just reach out directly. I think a lot of people would be willing to sell. They didn't even know it was a possibility, right? And if you approach them probably with even a lesser multiple, you could use this as a starting point and say, look at this one, yours is similar. You might be able to go purchase this stuff off market. And that's where you are going to get the creative financing, the seller financing.
Yeah. And like, you can't underestimate, a lot of people start these sites. Like, I mean, this person could have started this site years ago, right? I mean, I don't think it's got does it have the age on there? I don't think it has the age on there. It might be they're just somebody who's passionate about RVs. Like they might travel around in an RV themselves and maybe this funds their lifestyle or something like that. Like, people that start those businesses that way, they're typically not thinking about the exit. Do you know what I mean? They're just like, well, I didn't know it was worth that much. You know, when you talk to them about it, like you say to people sometimes, did you know you could sell your business? And they're like, what? Well, I never really thought about that. And you're like, well, I think it's worth this much. Would you take that for it? Yeah, cool. You know what I mean? Like, I think you'd be surprised to your point of just, if you see sites out there and you're like, well, that would work well with my business. Like, just reach out to them and see. Hey, it's John here. I just wanted to let you know that the Low Bar Pod membership is now live. So if you've been loving the show and you'd love to hang out directly with myself and Ben and a whole bunch of other like-minded individuals to do more fun business stuff, head to lowbarpod.com/join. It's just $9 a month. It's cancel at any time. We can't wait to see you inside.
All right, this show's all about, you know, the bar is low, business is simple, people are lazy. When I first heard this idea that I'm about to pitch you, I actually really like this idea. So this is a close friend of ours. You know, thank you, sir, for letting us put this story in the podcast. But he spoke about this to me, and I was like, I like this idea a lot. So the pitch he heard was, you will get $3,000 to $5,000 per month per machine in passive income. They will handle everything. They'll find the location, they'll handle compliance, and they'll place the machine. And the machine they're talking about is a Bitcoin ATM. So if you've never heard of them, you know, look, we talked about on the PDF episode, I'd like to teach people how to buy Bitcoin the right way and get it in your own custody. There are lesser ways to do this. I would say a Bitcoin ATM is even stranger to me. I get the purpose of them. I actually don't mind the idea for the purpose of it. You're buying it. You know, you can buy it at a gas station. It'll print you out a receipt. You have a QR code. That is your keys, if you will. So you have access to this. And so a lot of people who, you know, maybe they don't have access to payment rails to send money back to their family back home or send things abroad and they don't want to, you know, get stuck in the SWIFT system and wait 4 days to get their money. You can move this instantly and you can move it for pennies. And so I can see why this is appealing. And so again, he got pitched on this $25,000. You get a course and the machine and you just sit back and collect checks is what he was pitched on. So I imagine there's some people listening who are like, hell yeah, I'll make $3,000 to $5,000 a month if I just spend $25K and sit back and kick my feet up. That sounded a little too good to be true. That would have set off some red flags for me, John. But yeah, you know this person. We can handle it delicately if we want to. But you know me. I do enjoy Bitcoin. I know. I don't know. Actually, don't know your feelings about it. If I'm honest, right now we are in the middle of a bear market once again. So I look like a fool. Everybody's probably screaming, "I told you so" on Bitcoin to BK. But like, what do you think of this idea? Would it have intrigued you, or would it have thrown up red flags right away?
Look, I definitely like the idea. Like in a broader sense of investing into things that people use that kind of just sit there. It's kind of like the laundromat thing. Buy a laundromat. It's open. Yeah, you've got to do maintenance, and there's definitely things you have to do. But it, you know, the machines kind of just sit there. People come in and use them. They go out again. You know, you're not doing a ton of customer service and all of that sort of thing. And there are other machines, like vending machines, is obviously a business opportunity. I mean, we know some people who have vending machine routes and things like that. You know what I mean? And that works. That can work, I should say, for people. And you can get a decent return out of it for sure. So this kind of fits into that same method of, a lot of people try and say it's passive income, it's passive investment, blah blah blah. You know, of course it's not, like, truly, but you know, I guess it's kind of close, right? And so in that sense, like, I understand, like, if you got some spare cash and you want to put it somewhere, and you know, that's going to generate a return that's not sitting in a bank or in stocks or something like that, like, could some of this sort of thing be a good idea? I mean I think there are circumstances where it can be a good idea. Bitcoin ATM and some of those numbers, yeah, no, that would have, to me, that would have been a red flag. And not because I think there's inherently anything wrong with Bitcoin, or it, nothing to do with it as an investment either. You know, I know you're somebody who's got a very long-term view on it, right? You've been talking to me about it for years when we talk. You're always telling me about it, and I know you've got a very long-term outlook on that. The problem for me on this one just would have been, I don't see the market for it. Like, I get the potential use cases for it. A lot of people spruik about all the potential use cases for this, that, and the other. But does that mean the average punter out there is actually using it for that? No. It's like AI at the moment. Yeah, there's a ton of crazy cool stuff you can do with it that, like, the 0.001% of people who reside in the tech world use it for. But is the average punter on the street using it for any of that stuff? No, they're not. They're absolutely not. And it can be really easy to get wound into circles where you believe that that is happening out there in the real world, but it's really not. And so, like, I get the use case. One of the use cases you mentioned for this that you could understand is, like, you know, people avoiding kind of traditional money transfer systems and stuff like that. Like, that makes sense, but are that many people actually doing it that you're going to have enough people coming to a Bitcoin ATM in the middle of probably bumfuck nowhere to do that? I don't think so. I don't see it. I would see this opportunity and I would go, that sounds cool and the numbers sound great, but I don't truly believe there's enough people using it for that purpose. Or that I'm going to be able to pick the one or two locations out there where there are enough people. Like, how are you going to know that there are enough people? Because once again, you're probably not putting one of these things in the busiest part of the country, right? You're probably picking some part of a city somewhere or a suburb somewhere. I'm sure they say they've got some method of working it out. But, like, to me, I wouldn't have confidence that I could work out that there are enough. They placed it in Cheswick, Pennsylvania. Yeah, right. Middle of nowhere, to my point. How could you possibly know that there are enough people going to use a Bitcoin ATM in Cheswick, Pennsylvania to know that this is a good investment? I don't believe you could do that. I'm sure there are people out there who say you can. And I'd be happy to call bullshit on it right now without even looking at it.
Have you seen that graph floating around about AI usage at all?
No, I haven't.
I'll show you this. So this is kind of fascinating. This illustrates your point, right? Each dot is 3.2 million people. 4/5 of this graph is gray, which means they've never touched AI in their life. And then this green dot, which is like 1/5 of the picture, is people who have, like, free chatbot users, yep. Right? Then there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 7 yellow dots of people who pay $20 a month. And then there's 1 red dot of people who, like I would consider myself probably in that red dot, right? I'm paying for multiple platforms and we're using it all the time in our businesses. And so right now it feels like everyone's all in on AI. And this just tells you an absolutely different story, that 4/5 of the world has never even touched an AI at all. And so I don't know. I found that when you said that, it made me think of this graph.
Yeah. And you know, you absolutely know that's true with cryptocurrency. There would be the same graph for that. Go out and walk up the street and ask how many people own Bitcoin. I could do it right now. I wouldn't speak to a single person, I bet you. Here in Australia. I'm in Australia. It's probably even a little bit different to the US here. Every country is going to be a little bit different. But I guarantee you, if I went to the little coffee shop across the road, I'm not in a big city or anything. I'm in a regional area. And I stood out the front and asked every person who walked in there, do you own Bitcoin? I would be surprised if I got one in 4 hours.
I'd love to know those numbers because I bet it's a little more than this. But it, you know, I'm trying to think of the use case for this. You got pitched on $3,000 to $5,000 a month. Even the use case I gave you, that is a lot of transactions to get a transaction fee of $3,000 to $5,000 that is yours, right? You're probably splitting that transaction fee with the company who placed the machine for you, right? They have to pay their FinCEN and their KYC and their AML like fees and stuff on there, right? And so that's a lot of fee. That's a lot of transactions. And so unless you're in this neighborhood, you know, with a lot of people sending money back home or a lot of people who are trying to, you know, send money abroad for some reason, or it's the middle, like the end, really, the end of a Bitcoin bull market and everyone's talking about it, your grandma's talking about it. Maybe for that, like 1 month, you're hitting those fees. I can't imagine ever hitting those fees no matter where you put this machine. I could definitely give you some use cases. I'm definitely, you know, the person to talk to if you wanted me to give you some weird use cases, but that's what they are. They're like, they're edge cases at the moment, right? There's just not a lot of people utilizing the blockchain for this.
And even for a machine like this, it's not even for like, yeah, sure, your granny might own 1/20th of a freaking Bitcoin or whatever, but like, when is she doing anything with that? Never, right? She's not going and using a Bitcoin ATM either. Do you know what I mean? So even the majority of people, even if they hold a little bit of Bitcoin or even a lot of Bitcoin, like yourself, like as a, like compared to the average person, you probably own a lot more. Are you going and using a Bitcoin ATM? No, you're not. Probably not, right? And so even for the average holder of Bitcoin, this still isn't even useful for them at this point, really, truly. It's really even a smaller subset of the overall small subset of people that own that cryptocurrency in the whole, like out of the people of the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think people are utilizing the ATM to buy Bitcoin. I think they're utilizing it to move money cheaply and without resistance, right? I still can't. Anyway, here's the thing. So it took almost a year to just find the location for them. That would have pissed me off, right? That would have been you screaming for my money back, yeah. Right? So a year to find a location, get the machine installed and online, a year of waiting. Like you said, they placed it in Cheswick, Pennsylvania. Couldn't even tell you where that is. Once it was finally live, I think he said it had only done a handful of transactions lifetime. So zero revenue whatsoever. And now he said the machine is sitting in storage. Well, the company looks for a new location. He's in total limbo. He said he tries not to think about it. I'm pretty sure the company got sold that he was working with as well in the middle of this. So I feel like he's just written this one off totally, which is kind of wild to me.
Yeah, because I suppose you have to pay every month to have it placed somewhere, don't you?
I mean, they're going to place it. I mean, it's a win-win for them too, right? They want it in a location generating fees, so they get money. I'm sure they enjoyed the $25,000 they got up front to get started here, and that partially went to a machine. But they're also it seems smart. They're incentivized to do the same thing here. I don't know. This is wild to me. I give him a lot of shit for this. So if you're listening to this, buddy, we love you. I think this is one of the funnier stories that I've ever encountered, and I'm shocked I didn't fall for it too. If it would have came in front of me, I definitely would have done it. I've like you mentioned, I'm not a big crypto guy. I believe what Bitcoin is trying to do. I think it is true money that we've never had to exist, and so I probably would have bought into this thesis and been like, hell yeah. You know, same thing with Bitcoin mining. If the opportunity ever came in front of me, yeah, I would probably buy a miner. And, you know, I have a little one out here in the warehouse. This is one of those little ant miner things, but like, you know, an actual miner in mining Bitcoin. I think you could have sold me on this idea at one point in my life for sure, when I was a little more naive. Quick ad. I take this stuff called KE4 from Ketone Aid. It tastes like rocket fuel, like actual rocket fuel. I'll show you. Yeah, it's brutal, but I'm in flow state 90 seconds later, whether I want to be or not. Pair it with Alpha GPC, and I get more done in 2 hours than I would in a normal day. I recently chatted with the founder, and he takes this product way more seriously than most supplement people. If you want to try KE4, go to ketoneaid.com/lowbar. They're giving our listeners free shipping if you go through that link. Just know, it tastes terrible, it isn't cheap, and it will make you uncomfortably productive. That's ketoneaid.com/lowbar.
Well, I personally, after having this conversation, I'm looking forward to all of the Bitcoin bros commenting on this YouTube video and telling me how wrong I am. I made a video a few weeks ago that involved some ChatGPT stuff, and lo and behold, I got the comments of, you don't know how to do prompts, bro. You're fucking shit. So if you're one of those people, just comment away. I mean, you just look like an idiot.
I would support the Bitcoin people. The other people, like, it's finally you're due. You're overdue. The amount of comments that I get, hey, fatty, or hey, look at your nose. You must be a drunk or whatever they said. Like, the comments that I get on our videos have built up over time. It's time for you to get some love too.
Yeah.
Chat, like, if you're listening to this, hate on John. He said Bitcoin is crypto. They're all the same. They're the same thing as Ethereum. He doesn't care. No one uses it. Hate on him. Hate on him, chat.
Yeah, yeah, hate on me. And I love it how the people who hate on you, like, because I always call them straight back out. Like, and so if you do hate on me, just be aware I'm going to come straight back to you and say, what the fuck have you done, buddy? Like, post it. And it's always crickets. Every single time, it's crickets. Oh, well, I own 0.5% of a Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. I'm an expert. Fuck off.
What would make you, I'm curious, like, it, you know, there's only 21 million Bitcoin that exist, right? And so I think people striving for one is a great goal, but I do think it is the most misunderstood asset on the planet. Most people are buying a Bitcoin to get more dollars. They're buying Bitcoin to get more dollars, which I vehemently disagree with. You should want more Bitcoin in the end, it should not be an investment thesis that you're buying it and trying to get more dollars. So I'm actually curious if you get any comments, and I can't wait to interact with them as well. All right, so we don't mean to rail on our buddy. Our buddy has a second story in this podcast. So you may have heard of the ADA lawsuits that came about, John, way back in the day. In fact, I have some buddies that have paid huge fees to make them go away, right? So for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what that was, there are predatory law firms out there. I'm sure you've seen them on your TV, right? Where they're like, have you been affected by mesothelioma? Enter your number here and get on the list, and we're filing a big lawsuit, right? They want you to get on class actions. Well, there's also like little small ones where it is a law firm who sees a law that can be exploited. They find a patsy. They find a person who they can use for said lawsuit. They split money with them. And so ADA was one where, and I'm sure some of these were legit, please don't hammer me, chat, but ADA was one where a law firm saw that there were websites that were that may or may not have been ADA compliant, that they were not able to be used by people with disabilities the way that the law interprets that you should have your website able to be used. And so they would go find somebody who was blind or disabled in some way, and then they would use that person and go sue websites. Now, they had no intention of ever going to court with you, although I do know somebody who went to court now that I think about it. That is amazing. That just popped into my head. But I know a bunch of people who just said, go away. What do we have to do to make you go away? And they would pay a fee. I can think of one person in particular who definitely paid $50,000 to make this go away, and other people who have paid smaller amounts. I can think of one guy who was very vocal about it, so I'll say his name, Eric from Beard Brand. He somewhere on Axe, he told the whole story. He said, there's absolutely no way I'm going to pay you. He actually went to court. He fought for himself. He was his own lawyer, and he won the lawsuit. And he was just like, this cost me way more than if I had just settled, but I had to do it out of principle. And so that's awesome, right? So the ADA ones have been around a while. I don't know. Do you know anybody personally that was affected by the ADA stuff, John?
I don't. Once again, I mean, this is obviously a US specific conversation. This doesn't really exist in other countries that I'm aware of, or at least it's not so easy to do it in other countries that I'm aware of. But no, I haven't heard of any ADA ones specifically. No, I mean, I've heard of it, like I've heard stories of it, but I don't know anyone personally at this point, which I'm happy about because it's such a scam.
Well, the worst part of the ADA one was you would go get the app that was supposed to help you be ADA compliant, and they would just, you can just go get the list of who has Shopify apps, right? And then they would just go sue everybody with that app because the app wasn't quite right as well. So all these people are trying to do the right thing, and then they end up getting sued.
And that's the shit thing about it. Like, I have no problem with websites being ADA compliant, right? But like, it is so easy as somebody who sets up a business and builds a website to miss one tiny little thing inadvertently, and you're technically not ADA compliant because you didn't have an image alt tag on one page on your website fucking somewhere or some shit. It's like, why not just help people become ADA compliant to actually help the people who rely on that, people with a disability or whatever? Why do we sue people? Like, just boggles my mind that your justice system even allows people to do that. Like, it's just clearly frivolous.
They heard our podcast and they said the bar is super low. You know, they're showing you, buddy.
Well, this is an example of how low the bar is to make some money. Sure. If you really want to, if you want to be that dodgy person, go for it.
I reached out to our buddy and I said, walk me through this, right? So I'm using the words that he submitted over, mixed with a little bit of Claude here. He just said, someone we know got sued in Florida. The claim, his website has a live chat feature that records conversations without explicit upfront consent. So Florida is a two-party consent state. There's an FSCA privacy statute that says you need consent from both parties before recording a communication. His chat widget didn't have that consent banner turned on, which is wild to me that this company doesn't have it automatically turned on. Yeah. Maybe we should call them out. The plaintiff was not a customer. So they've never bought anything. They never intended to buy anything from the site. They just visited the site, opened the chat, typed something, and then sued. They sued for $12,000. And when we looked up the plaintiff, he looked up the plaintiff and it says, this person has sued Uber, Arby's, and many, many other like major businesses. There were 6 law firms listed on the claim. And so this is not someone who felt wronged by a chat widget. This is obviously a business model, right? So after he spent some time with ChatGPT trying to figure out what to do, which, you know, thank you, lawyer ChatGPT, chat said, call them and lowball the shit out of them. And so he did. He called them, he lowballed them, and moments later they settled at $4,000. So they were going to sue for $12,000. They served him. He needed to come to Florida. He went way lower than four. And then they said, how about $4,000? And they shook hands. The whole call was less than a minute. And the fix was simply turning on that setting in the chat, which why wouldn't that just be on automatically? That blows my mind. So I don't know. This whole thing just reeks. Like, you kind of want to meet the people behind it and just punch them in the face. Like, this just, yeah. This whole situation reeks.
Yeah, and they probably have some little story they tell themselves, like, oh, well, we're probably doing the right thing and blah, 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 or maybe they're part of organized crime or whatever. Who knows? Like, I mean, legit, like, they could be. Like, this totally feels like some little organized crime thing that they do on the side, you know, just go and scam the hell out of people. And, you know, if they say they don't want to pay, maybe get a little heavy with them and threaten them and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, once again, like, this sort of shit, like, sure, I totally get, like, I would probably be tempted to pass that cost on to the people who run the app, because are you going to be across every little thing everywhere? Like, I've got some things, and, you know, it doesn't relate to this business, but, you know, some of the tools out there when you run an international business, for Klaviyo, for example, like a tool that we use for email on some of our businesses and sending SMSs, you go and you sign up for an SMS with them, and if you've got a business that can operate internationally, they literally tell you every country that you have to be aware of, that you have to do something different in to send SMSs to people in that country, right? Because the laws are different in every country around this stuff. And so that's a really good practice, I think. Kind of blows my mind that that chat widget doesn't just turn it on for you automatically. Like,
yeah, how do they have a setting and it's off? Like, out of the, like, default. Who's using this chat and not using it like on the internet where someone from Florida could come be on your website?
Yeah. And like, I mean, I've been in e-commerce for over a decade. I haven't heard that Florida had this specific law.
I don't think I knew about ever. It either. Yeah.
Ever. And so you can argue, I mean, the people who are running these little lawsuits would probably argue, well, it's your responsibility as a business owner to make sure that you're aware of this and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Cool. Technically. But, you know, like, it's pretty easy to make an inadvertent mistake when you have 52 states that all have different laws. You know what I mean? Like, it's a pretty dumb system. Once again, that people can do that, like send a letter and say, hey, you're not compliant, switch it on. Okay, great. You're not going to argue with that. And so, I don't know. Hey, John here for just a sec. You know how we're always breaking down these wild business ideas and road testing opportunities that other podcasts won't touch? Well, we're growing our own business here, this podcast, and we need your help. So here's the deal. If the Low Bar podcast has given you that holy shit, I can actually do this moment, or just made your commute less boring, help us out. If you're watching on YouTube, go and hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on Spotify, go to our profile page on Spotify and smash that 5-star button. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, hit the review button and leave us a review. It takes you just 30 seconds, costs you nothing, but helps us reach more people who think starting a business is rocket science, which it's not. And it will also give us the momentum we need to do even more fun and crazy business stuff right here for your entertainment. We love to keep it real with you. Now keep it real with us. Let's grow this thing together.
This feels eerily similar to an episode. So it came out November 19th. It's called Where's Your Ethical Bar in Business? If you guys haven't listened to that one, yeah, go back and check that one out. This should have been on that episode of like, would you do this, John? Because you're not breaking any laws. You're just being a cunt and you're getting paid, right? You just need to find some patsy to be the person who is the name on the lawsuit, right? you're getting $4,000 every single one of these all day long. It is not hard to find businesses who use a specific chatbot. So once you know which one breaks the law, it's not hard to figure out how many people, you know, go to builtwith.com and find every website that uses this tool. You'd be making bank, John. So it takes me back to Where's Your Ethical Bar? Would you do this? It feels very much payday loany to me. Like we have similar feelings to payday loans, but what would you do here?
Punch myself in the face. Like, come on.
With all your dollars.
Yeah, with my fists of dollars. Yeah, you're right. You could definitely build a system around doing this. It wouldn't be hard to find a whole bunch of little loopholes to exploit. I'm sure with different businesses and different laws. Once again, in the US, it's kind of made for it because you have so many different states with different laws. Almost nothing is federal. So it's the same across the whole country. And so it kind of does, you know, fit this model very well because of that. Because there's always, like, when you have a different law in every state, there's always going to be somebody who's missing the little tick box in one state somewhere, and whether it's California or Florida or, you know, wherever. And yeah, these opportunities are going to be out there for sure. But no.
Since I scripted this, we had another friend of ours who said they also got sued. So it is clearly already spreading, which is very interesting to me. But thank you. We have a friend who volunteered the last two stories. Thank you, friend. We won't put you on blast. We appreciate you very much for sharing these stories because that shit's hilarious to me.
Yeah, we love you. And good on you for lowballing them and not just accepting it up front, for sure.
All right, so the last thing I want to talk about today is we've been getting some feedback of like, oh, all of those sound nice, but I have no money. In fact, we get that comment a lot on, you know, us trying to teach you to start an e-commerce business. So we teach a course, we charge about $2,000, and every sales can possibly make you $300 to $1,000, right? Like, honestly, it's one of the more no-brainer offers in the marketplace, in my opinion. And we still get the, yeah, but it takes money to make money, or I don't have money, or how would you get money? And I think we've even done podcasts on that in the past. And something showed up yesterday into my office that made me go, oh shit, here's a real way to do this. So I'll walk you through. I bought a Body Solid G9S, which is like a full home gym, right? It's one of those that has like a leg press and a pull down bar and everything you can think of. I'm sure I could pull one up on screen here if you really wanted me to. And so this thing is an absolute bear to put together. Like when it showed up, it said 1,300 pounds on the pallet. It was a double pallet, lots of boxes. I knew right out of the gates that I'm not putting this together. It's kind of like putting a tent together with your wife. You know, if you put it together with somebody, you're going to really figure out whether you love them or not. So our friend out here, our employee, Ben, him and I put a sauna together and we did fine. We didn't argue or anything and it took some time, but both of us looked at each other and we were like, nope, I don't want to do this. And so I went on to a site called TaskRabbit. I don't know if that's a thing over there, John. I'm sure you have probably something similar. And I wanted to find somebody who would put this together for me. And so I've used TaskRabbit in the past when my former business partner, Brian Angel, sent me a standing desk and a treadmill from his company and my former company. I, you know, sent them over to put it together. I just didn't want to mess around with it. Could not find that guy, but I found another guy and there's only two people for options in my area. So I live just outside the metro area of Minneapolis-St. Paul. I think there's a lot more options in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but there's not a lot who are willing to drive just outside of the metro. So I had two options. I had a guy for $60 an hour, tons of reviews, and people trust him. You know, he's tons of photos of being in people's houses and, you know, make you feel comfortable that a guy's coming over to your house, right? The other option was $40 an hour, but no reviews, total unknown. So I went with the known product. You know, I wanted somebody trustworthy. Turns out TaskRabbit throws some fees on there too, right? So after talking to him, he told me he sets his rate at 60. I get charged 62. And then TaskRabbit throws another 21 on top of that for connecting us and, you know, insuring us or whatever else TaskRabbit does. So effectively, I'm paying $83 an hour. He gets 60. TaskRabbit's taking whatever, 28% of that to do that. This gym is unbelievably hard to put together. Apparently, it's going to take 10 hours. It's supposed to take like 8 to 10 hours for two people. He's going to do it by himself in 10 hours. When he got here, so he's coming back tomorrow to finish it. He did the first half yesterday. I just started asking him questions, and this is what got me thinking. So his words, not mine. He's a failing artist. He's like, no one wants to buy art anymore. I'm not a handyman. I'm not a tradesman. I have no special skills. I'm just following the instruction manual the same as you would. He's just willing to do it, and I'm not willing to do this. And so it got me thinking of like, what else can he do to fund what he should be doing? So we talk a lot about the creator economy, like YouTube and podcasts and TikTok and things like that. But I feel like TaskRabbit is also part of, if you will, the creator, kind of like Uber, right? Like what Uber did to taxis, TaskRabbit is doing to all of the shit that you would like done around your house or handyman stuff or putting stuff together. And so there is no barrier to entry, John. Like think about Uber. You don't have to be a professional driver to drive for Uber. You don't have to be a professional handyman to do this. And I think if you did the math here, you would find that this can be your funding that everyone has been asking us for. Great, you know, it takes money to make money. And we always say, cool, go mow some fucking lawns or do something, right? Like, it's not hard to figure, you know, go flip some stuff, right? This kind of the premise of this whole show is how to make some extra cash. But even this show, we were getting pushback of like, well, how do you fund your purchase of something? And I think this can be it. Anybody can follow directions in an IKEA booklet and put together a bed.
Yeah. I agree. We have a site like TaskRabbit in Australia. I don't know if TaskRabbit is here, but like AirTasker, it's called here. I don't know if you have that one over there as well. But same. It's exactly the same thing. Like, you can just get people. You can post stuff. I need this done, or you can find people to do particular things by category and stuff, and obviously, you know, put a rate up and all of that sort of thing. And I've used that sort of stuff a little bit over the years. Like, I used to do sort of real estate renovations and stuff, I'd get like people to come and help me with laboring tasks. Like, just, I need somebody to wheelbarrow 57 wheelbarrows of mulch from one side of the property to the other, and I don't have time to do it, right? So I just go into AirTasker and be like, hey, can you walk behind a wheelbarrow? Yeah, cool. All right. You know, come and do it. Like, and I'll pay you like a couple of hundred bucks to get this task done, and you're done. Like you say, no skills, you know, you just got to be strong enough to do it, and that's about it. I'll give you the wheelbarrow and whatnot. And so I've done that a bunch of times. I've only ever had one failure at it, and that was actually the office I'm sitting in right now. I needed to paint the interior walls, and I didn't want to do it myself because I didn't have time because I was super busy. And so I put a task up on AirTasker, and you know, I actually the people I got to come and do it, they had some reviews, so I was in a hurry and I needed it done quick, and the people with more reviews couldn't do it quicker, but there were these people, they had some reviews, and I was like, all right, come and do it. And they turned up in like this clapped out car, and they get out and they're just like the biggest meth head looking this man and this woman. I was just like, oh crap, this is not gonna go well. And it didn't go well. They were fucking terrible. They did such a shit job. Terrible. And I don't want to turn people off from doing it, but it wouldn't have been hard to do a better job than them. I absolutely agree. Like, there's stuff on here anyone can do. Like, I don't care who you are. There is going to be something that you can find to do for somebody else on a platform like this, and make some money with it. I wouldn't accept that you can't. But I think where it would be easy, if you were somebody that doesn't have like a, even somebody, if we go to the like sort of the lowest entry point, you don't have any technical skills, you don't have any particular background or anything, like whatever you say you're going to do for people like this, like your task, Ben, pick something you're going to do where you're not going to be competing against qualified people. So for the example, I wouldn't say if I was on AirTasker, I'm going to come and do wall painting for you, because there are professional painters on there that you can hire through that platform as well. And so you're competing with them. Whereas for this one, like this guy, I'm going to come and assemble your thing, your gym equipment or whatever. You don't need to be qualified to assemble gym equipment, right? There's no qualified gym equipment. Well, there probably is. They probably have some little qualification from some company, but like, it's not like you did a trade or you went to university to learn how to assemble gym equipment. So you're not competing against people on that basis. And I think that's going to be, make it even easier if you can find something to do that it's just, or like me, like going and just helping somebody move something from one place to another, or, you know, just dig a hole, or like, I don't know, like whatever it is. At that point, you know, it doesn't matter what you've done before. As long as you're willing to do the work, you can get hired to do it. And you know, if you need extra money, you need to make some extra money to start your own business and do this on the side of other things, of your job even, or whatever. Like, yeah, you're right. You don't really have any excuses. Like, if you say, oh, no, I don't want to do that, blah, blah, I mean, that's just you being lazy. Like, let's be real. It is.
I want to set the bar so low no one can go under. I know there's going to be somebody that's like, I can't do any of that for some strange reason that I'm sorry, I can't help you. But for 99.9% of people, something here, right? You can do food delivery. You can do Uber. You could do something on TaskRabbit. You can go to local garage sales and find something to flip on eBay. There is so much that you can do nowadays to get off of the ground, get off of step zero and get on to step one. And so, I don't know, this fascinating. I'm going to end up paying him, you know, $600 to him and whatever, $800 and some dollars to TaskRabbit total. And so, you know, $600 can be the next thing, right? We're going to have a gal on next week that Shannon talked about. Her name's Mindy, where she bought her first pallet for $1. And then she turned that $1 into, I believe she said, a few thousand dollars, right? And so you don't need a lot to get started, right? $600 can do a whole lot for you. I've been sharing in our private community that we bought $186 worth of Pokemon cards from Costco, and we flip them for $250, right? The one job here gets you that first flip, and that first flip gets you to your second flip, and your second flip gets you to the third one. I think there's so many ways out there, and I didn't know this was that big of a thing until I looked into it. There's just so many ways out there for you to get that first few dollars so that you can get started. And the time you're spending getting this first few dollars is the same time you're going to allocate to your next thing. And so get used to having that time outside of every other daily routine you have to build what you want to build. It's going to take time either way. And so I love this idea. I thought it was so unique that dude, he does not look like a handyman. He looks like an artist. He's got some, you know, huge glasses on. He's a quirky guy. And he's here putting it together.
Yeah. You should go and talk to him about how he's trying to sell his art. Like there's probably an episode in that, because people are 100% still buying art. There are artists out there making six figures every year, right? Like it's like anything. I'd love to know, like, when he says that nobody buys art, like, what is that based on? How is he trying to do it? I'd love to know, because, I mean, you know, maybe his art just doesn't appeal to many people. Maybe it's super niche, or I don't know, something like that. But, like, once again, that's not a problem that actually exists. So, like, yeah, I'd be curious. Like, it's kind of like you coaching your, I bet you if he told you, like, what he was doing to sell your art, you'd probably say, well, have you thought about doing this, or do you do that, or do you do this? And you're like you were saying with your barber, you know, he's probably got some opportunities that he's not even thought of yet.
Well, it's either an episode or I should just record, hey man, do you mind if I record a 2-minute conversation and put it in our little community, in our low bar community of like, hey, tell me about TaskRabbit stuff, tell me how you're selling your art, stuff like that. Like, I've definitely seen a lot of YouTube videos where people just walk into a business and they're like, you know, tell me how well you do, how many pizzas do you sell, what do you need to break even, stuff like that. Like those type of conversations, those are the ones I'd like to have at every establishment I go to. Not, oh, sure is nice outside, I'm gonna get an early spring this year. I don't want to have that shit. I want to ask those type of questions. So I don't mind being a weirdo. If you guys want to be weirdos with us, check out lowbar.com. There's a community in there. It is just $9 a month. You know, come hang out with us. John and I we do AMAs in there. I've been showing my flip of the week in there, and there's only going to be more content coming in there of just John and I trying shit. We want you to come try some shit with us. So check it out at lowbarpod.com and come hang out with us.
Hey, real quick, while I have you here at the very end of the show, John and I are trying to grow our social media channels. We're also sharing what we're doing from some of these podcasts on the social media. So we'd love to have you follow us. You can find us at Low Bar Podcast on TikTok and on X, and you can find us at Low Bar Pod on Instagram and on Facebook. Of course, all of these will be in the show notes of every episode. So if you could give us a follow, maybe like a few posts. Obviously, we're trying to grow our business too. Thank you so much for listening and following along and helping us grow what John and I are trying to build here.